Good morning, everyone, and my special welcome and pranam to our Swamiji from Rameshwaram, who is here, Swami Pranavanandaji. I would have loved to have scheduled this Sunday talk for him. He came very suddenly at the end. We'll ask him to say a few words afterwards, and he'll also be here for a couple more days. He'll leave on Wednesday, so there'll be a chance for all of you to meet him and talk to him. The topic this morning I gave was rejuvenated, and this was the topic that I gave before I went on this long trip to India and Bangladesh, and it was wishful thinking that I would come back rejuvenated, and I'm the same person I was before, but anyhow, a little added inspiration, and this was the theme, and it just coincidence that it ties in with today being the New Year, according to the Bengali calendar. So happy New Year to everyone. And of course, springtime, when everything is automatically rejuvenated, that after the long winter, we start to see all the blossoms and flowers and everything come out. So this was my way of kind of tying in a little bit of the trip that I took. I'll talk about some of the places that we went to and everything. And then also this idea that we have to re-inspire ourselves. In spiritual life, we have to be careful things don't get stale, that they don't become too routine, that we have to keep fanning the flames. So this is kind of the theme that I'll try to go through this morning. I remember when I first started my monastic life, that I was given two very valuable pieces of advice before I first went. This is when I went to our monastery in Tribhuku Canyon. The first thing I was told was, wear blinders. It's a very interesting thing that don't look from side to side. Don't bother about what anybody else is doing. If they're doing their practice, if they're not doing their practice, look straight ahead. You have your goal, you know what you want to do, you know what's important in spiritual life. Don't bother. There's a tendency to look around and see, oh, this person is doing so much more than me, then I feel that I'm not worthy. This other person sleeping in, this rascal is sleeping, I'm getting up early in the morning, going to the shrine. So then we feel that a little superior. So either superior or inferior, we shouldn't bother about any of these things. So this was a very nice piece of advice, that we try to develop good habits, we stick to those things, we follow our own routine, we don't compare ourselves with others. Of course, if we see others that are doing something exemplary, then we try to follow that. The problem with this human mind is that usually we find the faults of other people, and then we say, oh, they do that, I can do it. Yeah, we see that some person is a perfect sadhu in every way, but they don't get up early in the morning. So the mind says, oh, he doesn't get up early in the morning, why should I? Huh? We don't notice all the good things that they do. So anyhow, this was very helpful for me, that just don't look from side to side, look forward, be focused in your spiritual life. The second is the one that ties in more with today's topic. Always keep the fire burning. Fan the flames. Don't let that initial enthusiasm die out. In spiritual life, we shouldn't assume that that initial drive that we have in the beginning, that great enthusiasm that we feel when we first start spiritual life, we shouldn't assume that this will automatically continue on its own. We have to be very regular in our spiritual practice. We have to be very careful that we're doing things that will increase, because if we don't increase that longing for God realization, that longing to lead a good spiritual life, that flame can go out. So it may not die completely, but it'll just kind of be this burning ember that will never flame up too high. It won't accomplish very much. So this was very, very helpful, this idea that we have to keep fanning the flame. You remember the advice that Totopuri gave to Sri Ramakrishna. He said, if you have a brass pot And you polish it one day and you don't, the next day it'll get tarnished. So every day we have to polish it. That means every day we have to reinvigorate ourselves. We have to try to increase that longing that we have for our spiritual practice and spiritual life. So this is a very regular thing. Day after day, we have to try to keep this in mind. But there's something very special about going on pilgrimage, or taking some special trip, doing something to give a big boost. Otherwise, it's a daily thing. But doing something like going to a place of pilgrimage. As Swamiji states in Rameshwaram, every day is a pilgrimage for him. But to visit a holy place, to have special holy company, all of these things give a boost to our spiritual life and give a stronger sense of belonging to a spiritual community and this sense of rededication, that this renewal in monastic life, almost a kind of renewal of vows that we keep telling ourselves, yes, this is the life that I want to lead. I remember years ago, and the details are very hazy, so don't hold me to any of it, but reading about an order of Catholic nuns. When they take their vows, they take their vows for a lifetime. They expect to lead this monastic life for a full lifetime. But, and when they join, they keep their original clothes, they keep them in the closet, they cut their hair very short. After 10 months, 11 months or something, they start to let their hair grow out. Huh. And at the end of that 1 year, they're automatically freed from their vows. If they want to leave, they leave. No questions asked, nothing. If they want to remain, they have to shave their head again, take the vows again, and then they join. So they do this year after year after year so that they have that sense of rededication. And not simply that I'm remaining in this life out of inertia because this is what I was before. We have to make that decision every day that way. I was thinking, what if we did this with marriage? Huh? After 1 year, you're free from your vows. There's no divorce, anything. Then no one will say anything. You don't go through any legal proceeding, nothing. You simply, you walk away. If you want to remain married, you have to go through the marriage ceremony again. Of course, we'll lose a few. We'll lose a few marriages on the side. But think of that sense of rededication. And many people do renew their marriage vows. And in the monastic tradition, people do this. They renew their monastic vows also. So this is that idea that we can continue just out of inertia, that we've been doing it year after year. We don't think about it too much. Or we can stop and say, yes, I want to get a renewed sense of dedication to this spiritual life, or in our case, monastic life. So the method I want to focus on today, as I said, is pilgrimage, and I want to talk about this trip that I had, because it was a very wonderful trip. Most of you know I was away for close to 6 weeks, I would say 5 weeks, really, in India and Bangladesh. And it was very, very inspiring and on many different levels. And I did come back rejuvenated, you could say, in a sense. So I want to go through a little bit of this. This idea of pilgrimage. I remember a conversation I had once with Swami Bhuteshanandaji. He was the 12th president of our order, very wonderful. So I only had a private conversation with him two or three times. Not that I talked to him all the time. He was very high position and everything. But as I was leaving India, I went to him, which is our tradition, made pranam to him and everything. And then I said, Maharaj, when I'm in India, I feel great enthusiasm. How do I keep that enthusiasm when I go back? And I expected him to say something like, Thakur's there also, do your practice, this and that, but he didn't. He said, come here as often as you can. Yeah. And then he said, everybody loves you. It was very sweet. It was very sweet the way he said that. But anyhow, this shows the importance of, from time to time, going to a holy place, getting that inspiration, trying to bring back to mind how we felt when we had that initial enthusiasm for spiritual life. So the trip to India served that purpose. Of course, we went for a special reason. I went with Swami Sarvadevanandaji. I think all of you know him. He is the head of our Southern California Center and now in charge of this center also. And we went because of a temple opening that took place in a village called Baniyachong in the Sylhet district of Bangladesh. And the special feature of this is that this was the, what they call Mamarbari. This was the home of Swami Swaminji's mother and the uncles, his family members were there. We all assumed he was born there, but probably he was born in Habiganj. But it doesn't matter. Anyhow, so this temple opening was there, and really it was in honor of him. It was, you won't find his name on the temple or anything, but we all knew that this Baniyachong was associated with Swami Swaminandaji. Other sadhus came from there also. Swamiji's cousin is the president of the trust center. It's a private center there, and many of his family members are still there, and I knew all of his family members from an early visit, so it was a bit of a reunion for me also. So this was really a tribute to Swami Swaminandaji. So automatically, I remembered all of my past associations with Swamiji. I joined under him in 1981. I was with him for 16 years in Southern California, and then he started this center. This is his brainchild. This is his baby, this center, and sent me here. And he came, of course, as often as he could, usually twice a year. He would stay at least a week each time. So we all had the wonderful holy company of Swami Swaminandaji. So that in itself was inspiring, to be in the place where either he was born or where at least it's his mother's place. And his father died before he was born, so actually his mother's family was very important in his lifetime. His uncle and his grandfather really raised him. And though he lived mostly in the town of Habiganj, his uncle stayed there with him and everything. So there were so many wonderful associations. We went to visit also his father's home, in Puttiyurdi, and we stayed in Habiganj and everything. So, and his nephew, Nishit Maharaj, came with us the whole time also. So it was a really great tribute to Swami Swaminandaji. So this is one of the points that I want to make to keep this fire burning. We want to remember those early days, our early associations, when I first joined under Swami Swaminandaji. Another beautiful statement that Swami Bhuteshanandaji used to say, somehow he kept coming back to me when I was working on this talk. If you read his conversations, there are a series of books, Pariprasna, that when these young monks would ask him about, what to do in meditation, how to keep up this enthusiasm and everything, he would say to them very often, try to remember how you felt the day you joined the order. The young monks, when we joined, there's such a tremendous feeling of renunciation. Vairagya is very strong at that time, and longing for God realization and longing for service. These things are very strong at that time. If we don't remember those things and try to keep up that spirit, gradually it'll lessen and lessen and lessen. We won't realize. Thakur talks about this Fort Williams. There's a big fort in Calcutta that once you go in, everything starts going underground just for protection. It's several stories underground, but it's a very slow slope. You can hardly tell that you're going downhill. But he said, my goodness, after the long trip, we realized we're four stories underground. So we don't realize, if we don't keep up this enthusiasm, we don't realize how it starts to wane and become less and less and less. So this is one very nice idea, to try to remember, even at the time of meditation, to sit for meditation and try to think, how did I feel when I first began my spiritual life, when I first joined the order? I remember certain very special incidents, my 24th birthday when I first read Swamiji. How I felt. Now I read Swamiji, I take it for granted. Brilliant, of course. or such a rare soul. But when I first read it, it was like an electric shock. I couldn't believe the words that I was reading. So when I sit for meditation, sometimes I'll try to think how I felt when I first read the words of Swamiji. This is 24 years old. In Chennai, in Maharaj's place, in Tamil Nadu, how, at the same time that Swamiji was there also, how that I was drawn to buy that one book and how it changed my whole life. So it's helpful to remember, even at the time of meditation, to feel, try to renew that feeling that we had at these very special times. When I first joined in Trabuco, I remember those days, and then different trips to Belarmut. My first visit to Dakshineshwar, this was back in 1972, and it was such a profound experience walking into Thakur's room. I've been there many times since then, and each time it's a profound experience, but nothing like the first time. There's something special about that first time. And I took that ferry boat across from Belarmut, and it was just as the sun was going down, as we read with M's first visit, and you could hear the conch shells blowing and the gongs and the bell going and everything, and I felt like I was in heaven. I was in Vaikuntha. There I'm walking, I go into his room, and like you're in a different world. We sit for meditation, we can try to think, try to relive that experience, how we felt when we had that first visit. This was M's teaching, a great teaching of M, the recorder of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, Kathamrita. Whenever anyone would come to him, he would say, "Have you been to Dakshineshwar?" And if they said no, he would say, "Go there. Go there and visit. Don't go as a tourist. Go there and walk around. Look very carefully at everything. You look in this corner. This is where Thakur worshipped Holy Mother Shodashi. Then you look at this other side. This is where Rakhal had his first Bhava Samadhi. You go and see where Thakur did his Tantric Sadhana under the bell tree. Go to Panchavati. Go to all of these places. But look very carefully and etch these things in your mind. So when you sit for meditation, you can bring back these images. See, we meditate. Suppose we try to meditate on Sri Ramakrishna. There should be some context for it. He's not just floating in air. We say sitting on a lotus. And we can picture him sitting on his bed in his room. We can't see Sri Ramakrishna there. We see the bed, we see the room. All of that we can bring into our memory. So we have that context, and we can feel that divine presence there. So this is a very nice way of bringing some life into our meditation. And it requires going to the place. We can try to imagine what a place is like, but if we actually go there, then we see it. We can etch it in our memory that way. It's also nice to purchase something in a place of pilgrimage. I remember I went to a small place called Chitrakoot. Some of you may have gone there. Very holy associations with Sri Rama, Sita, and everything. And I bought just a very small Shiva Lingam, a couple of rupees, almost nothing. But I keep it on my shrine in my room. Whenever I see it, I'm reminded of that wonderful experience. I love that place. It's just there for a few days. So we have these little ways of reminding ourselves and making these things real to us. There's a very beautiful incident in the life of M, recorded in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. Thakur was talking about some of his spiritual experiences. Then I'll read, this is the section from the Gospel. M remained silent with wonder. He plucked one or two leaves from a branch in the Panchavati and put them in his pocket. "Master, see there, that branch has been broken. I used to sit under it." M, "I took a young twig from that tree. I have it at home." "Master, why?" M, "I feel very happy when I look at it. After all this is over, this place will be considered very holy." So there is something about the holy connection associated with some physical object, some small thing. For Emmett, it was the twig from that tree. That's one of my favorite sections from the whole Gospel of Shrimad Krishna. There's something very beautiful about that. Swami Parameshanandi, the disciple of a holy mother, he also, he was very much influenced by M, by the way. When he went to Calcutta for the very first time, he actually went to M's place first because he had read the gospel and he was very anxious to meet M. And then after that, M sent him to Dakshineswar. I went with him, I believe. Anyhow, he used to talk about these four holy places, Chardham. We hear this expression, Chardham, and different people think of different things. It may be Kedarnath, Badrinath, Gangotri, Yamunotri. It may be Amarnath and Rameshwaram and Puri, Dwaraka, different things. For him, it was Jagannabati, Kamarpukur, Dakshineswar, and Bellarmut. For him, these were the four holy places in India, and he wrote beautiful poems and hymns to these different places. And would encourage people to go there also and do the same thing, that you go to Kamarpukur, and each place you see, you remember different things that took place. When he went into Samadhi at the time of Shivratri, when he received Bhiksha at the time of the Upanayana, all of the different incidents. Why? So that at the time of meditation, these things can come back into the mind. And it'll make meditation very joyful. And it will re-inspire us. The reason for this, going to a place and looking very carefully, trying to remember these things, the reason for this struck me one day when I was sitting quietly, that when we talk about imagining something, we want to project the image of something in the mind. What does it mean to imagine something? It means to remember something. Most of the time, imagination is nothing but remembering. Suppose somebody says, try to imagine when you went to school for the first day. What do? We try to remember what it was like. Only here, we're taking it out of context. Somebody's tried to feel that you're sitting before Thakur in his room at Dakshineswar. What do? We remember how it felt when we sat in his room, and then we bring it into the present. But most of it is memory. The faculty of memory and the faculty of imagination are very closely intertwined. So when we go to some place and we very carefully try to deeply imbibe the feeling of that place and the actual physical presence. So there are two elements to this: how we felt when we were there and what the place looks like. And we try to bring both back, that tremendous inspiration that we felt, and also when we try to picture, to remember what everything looked like. Then any dryness that comes with meditation, and it can be eliminated this way. It's a very, very helpful way of bringing fresh life to our meditation. And we find that we look forward to it. We look forward to it. We in the morning, early morning, we get up, we come to the shrine for meditation. We can feel that, yes, we're going to see Thakur. We're going into his room. He'll be sitting there waiting for us. We remember M, Swami Tuiriananda, others. They all said, the moment we left Thakur's presence at Dakshineswar, the only thought we had was, when will we be able to come again? We can come every time. Every morning meditation, every evening meditation, we go and we sit with him, with the Holy Mother, with Swamiji, all the direct disciples, all the power of imagination, but combined with this power of memory. This is why it's important to visit these places and very carefully observe everything. So a large part of this trip, especially after the Bangladesh portion, had to do with visiting these four places. Of course, we stayed at Bellarmut mostly. But three nights we were in Jagannabati, one night in Kamarpukur. And the very first day that we reached India, of course, it was late at night, but the very next morning, we went straight to Dakshineswar and sat in Thakur's room and went to the Kali Temple and did all of those things. And really, we saw all of the places associated with Sri Ramakrishna, the Holy Mother, I thought I had seen everything, but we saw even places where Thakur stayed when he was the young priest before he went to Dakshineswar, when he was there with his brother, and the M's house, and of course, Kashipur, Balaram Mandir, Shampur, all of the places there. And you feel that it's a living tradition. You feel that this isn't just something you read in books. There's a continuity there from the very past to the present. And it does give a tremendous feeling of inspiration. You go to M's house, you see the very picture of Thakur that Holy Mother worshipped, right there. You see the clothes that they wore, and it becomes so real. This is why this idea of pilgrimage is such a very important thing. Now, Belermat, there's something special about staying in Belermat. How many people have stayed there? How many people haven't stayed there? Yeah. Yeah, this is something that at least once in the lifetime. Of course, staying at Belermat means also visiting the other places. But there's a special atmosphere there. You know, Thakur himself walked the grounds of Belermat before they purchased it. During his lifetime, he used to go across the river sometimes and visited different places, Shiva Mandir and everything. Anyhow, so much holy association with Swamiji, all the direct disciples. Holy Mother stayed there at Nilambar Babu's garden house just south of Belermat. So that is tremendously inspiring. And to go there for early morning meditation, also that I was there at the time of year that it starts at 4:30. When the weather gets hot, then it's 4 o'clock in the morning. So I would generally try to get into the temple a few minutes before, say 4:25 or something, and there'll be many monks already seated there. So I would sit there, and then they would open the shrine, and they would wave the lights for Mangal Arati. Then I thought, let me go a little bit earlier. So I went 15 minutes early. Same sadhus were all sitting there. Then I thought, how early do they go? Let me go half an hour early. Same sadhus are sitting there. So I'm thinking, my Lord, nobody knows. They may be sitting there for an hour, 2 hours before it starts without saying anything, no fanfare, nothing. And then you feel this tremendous inspiration that giving up their sleep, when else would they sleep? The afternoon hour or so, but to get up at 2 a.m, something like that, and that time of year you don't eat until 9 o'clock at night, so there's not much chance for sleep. So just seeing this is tremendously inspiring. Then evening arati, when you hear all full-throated, oh, that reminds me. We have our arati here at night, 6:30 every night. Some people come, it is very nice if people come and sing. It's not a solo thing. We have our songbook there. Sing loud is tremendously invigorating, a wonderful thing to sing these hymns. First two were written by Swamiji himself. The third from Chandi. It's very, very precious things. So that's just an aside. When you come, make sure you get out that songbook if you don't know the words and sing. So hundreds of monks and brahmacharis sometimes will be sitting there all singing together. And the pujari, Swamiji says that the pujari should also, if for devotion, the image should be beautiful. Pujari, you see the monks who are doing this evening worship with such grace, how they wave the lights and everything. It's mesmerizing. It's just so beautiful. So there's the evening arati. It's also a sight that one can just sit and meditate and as I say, imagine or remember, whichever one we want. Just picture in the mind, watching the pujari do this evening arati, and everyone is singing the hymns. Then the tremendous advantage of a holy company, and this will be personal contact. For me, this trip, it was so nice that I spent so much time with different sadhus. We traveled around a lot. Sarvadevananji and myself, his holy company is very precious to me. I have a special love for Swami Sarvadevananji. But there are other young monks who traveled with us also. And all of them are inspiring in their own way. One of them, it was an engineer, and he went from place to place overseeing a lot of the work of the order. Wicked sense of humor. Very, very funny, but tremendous devotion. You can see you didn't meet him. You won't know him. But this feeling of community is fantastic, not just in the temple, all sitting together on the floor for our meals, the noontime and the evening and everything, and you see the sadhus. You don't see them this way. You see them laughing and joking and teasing one another and everything. It's a very beautiful sight. Then there were several occasions where after meals, we would just sit together. Some of the senior sadhus would come, or they would come to Sarvadharanji's room, and we'd just start telling stories. And some of these were also very beautiful, wonderful, inspiring reminiscences and other things. There's one Swami, Divyanandaji. You've seen him. He came here. He came here once or twice. He's now a trustee. He's also a very wonderful sadhu. He was posted in our center in Malda for a number of years and initiated work with the prisoners there. He did tremendous work with rehabilitating them, finding work for them once they got out and everything. So he was telling about a conversation with, again, Swami Bhutashanandaji. That some young monks went to him and said, Maharaj, please bless us. Now, in our order, very often, the sadhus say, Thakur will bless you, or something like that. He won't say too much. But he said to them, may you always have the protection of the order. May you live your whole life as a sadhu, as a good monk of the order. He was very simple, this is Swami Bhutashanandaji, very wonderful, wonderful soul. So these things, they leave a deep impression when you hear them. When you hear these senior sadhus, some are younger than I am. This is a little shocking to think, but anyhow, when you hear them speak about these older sadhus with such reverence and such devotion, that is really something very thrilling about it. Then there's one Govinda Maharaj. I don't know how many of you ever met him. He was in charge of Atpur for a number of years. I knew him when he was at Belarmat. And he used to look after all of the Western monks who would go there, especially. That wasn't his only duty. But he was like a mother to us, who always coming in, do we need anything? This and that. Very loving, very sweet, but very strong and powerful also. I don't know how many years ago, it's a long time, he got cancer of the jaw. Yeah, and lost part of the jaw, and now cancer must have spread in the body because he's in a wheelchair. But every morning, 4:30 Mangal Arati, every evening he's in the temple, and with great effort, they get him out of his wheelchair and help him to walk in just to observe with folded hands, and then he'll go back. You see him, he's so cheerful, so sweet and loving. He always carries these lozenges with him, these little candies, and give them to everyone. We see this, we see the strength that comes from leading a spiritual life, a life of dedication. How so cheerful. Most people would be so depressed in that condition. Someone who was so vibrant and strong and now can barely get out of the wheelchair, but you see that glow, that spiritual glow in his face. And as I say, I was very, very close with him. So it was very touching. He was so sweet when he saw me also. Then the young monks, the brahmacharis that are there. I have a special reverence for these young monks because they have such great enthusiasm. There's one monastic order, I don't know what it is, that the tradition that the senior sadhus will make pranam to the monks when they first take sannyasa because there's a special holiness about them at that time. Yeah. So I also feel some special reverence for these very young monks because everything is so fresh with them. And nowadays, there are so many who are highly educated. They have their PhDs, many studied in this country, had good jobs and everything, and gave them up just to join the order. Like, you know who here? Our Kumar. Yeah. So to see them is also inspiring. We went to the valedictory program. At the end of the training center, there's kind of a graduation program. And There are two classes, the first year batch, and then the second year is the graduating batch. So one of the brahmacharis will speak from each batch, and then all of the seniors, the president of the order, the vice presidents, they all spoke very inspiringly that way. And when I have this habit, when I see all these very young monks who joined, that I think to myself, one day one of them will be the president of the order. We have to show great respect to them. Huh? One of them, that way. So that was another thing that was a very inspiring thing for me, and that program, that valedictory program, was very nice. Another feature of our monastic tradition is detachment, and detachment in the form of the attachment that comes from your very own center, your very own ashram. Because we see very often that without any notice, someone will be asked to move. This to go back to Bangladesh, there's one Swami, Nikhil Maharaj. He worked very, very hard, built up this beautiful temple in this place called the Habiganj. As soon as it was done, they said, "We're transferring you." Yeah. Why? Because he did such a good job, they wanted him to do the same thing, so he went to Chittagong from there. When I was there, there was a young monk. Many of you know him and like him very much, Tapas Maharaj. Yeah, it's very, very helpful. He's the one who looks after the guest house. So anyone who comes from the West, they'll meet him. Very sweet-natured. I've known him for a long time also. Very, very nice. When I was there, he got word one day that he's being transferred. There's no notice, nothing. He says, "You take a few days, and then we're sending you to this other center." It was a shock for him, but he said, "Yes, wherever the order sends me, I'll try to do my best." A very beautiful attitude that way. The Swami who replaced him, he was also a good friend of mine, my batchmate. We had sannyas together. This is Alokesh Maharaj, very, very nice. Very simple. I hope he doesn't get squashed down too much. He's in the hot seat now. Very simple, very sweet, very loving. He was in Kamarpukur for a long time. Now imagine going from village center, Kamarpukur, all the associations with Sri Ramakrishna and everything, then finding yourself, you know, bombarded day and night with the details of work and phone calls and everything at headquarters. But he had the same attitude. "Yes, I'll do my best, whatever I can do." So we have to have that type of detachment in the order. It's not going to happen to me, so anything, but it could. If this were India, they could very easily say one day, "We want you to go, you know, place 1,000 miles away, someone else will come here," because they do that. They rotate very often. This reminds me of another story of Swami Bhuteshanandaji Maharaj. Yeah, very beautiful story. He was a young monk at the time, and he was called to Belarmut. He didn't know why. I don't know where he was, Rajkot, I'm not sure. He was called to Belarmut, and all of the other monks who knew him, everyone loved him. He was very sweet natured. Everyone loved him. They said, "Maharaj, they're going to ask you, they want to transfer you to Chertapunji." Chertapunji is a remote place. You know, it used to have the highest rainfall in the world, and there's a tribal area, and there's always trouble there, that the tribals and Christian missionaries, they make life a hell there. So they said, "Don't go." They said, "They won't force you to go. They'll ask you, are you willing to go there?" And so they all said, "Don't go." Now, the Swami Bhuteshan, it was very simple. Like Thakur, if somebody said, you know, "Why not try this? Stick your head out the carriage, the gate, and you'll get the air." And, you know, it was very simple. So he did that. He said, "Oh, no, please forgive me. I'd rather not go there." So they said, okay. They didn't force him because it was a difficult place. So he went back, and then he heard that one of his friends was called in, and his friend was sent there. And then he said, "Oh, my God, it's because of me that he has to go and suffer. I'm the cause of that. Because I didn't want to go, he has to go." So immediately he went back to the trustees and said, "Please forgive me. You send me there." So he went there, and of course he took care of everything. They all loved him, all the tribal people, the missionaries, everyone. So this is that spirit of detachment, that spirit of obedience, you can say. And we went to his birthplace. There's a beautiful center now. Shomshar is a very small village, very charming village. We went to so many villages on this trip, but that was somehow the most charming. And there's a Dr. Gurdas. And I'll talk about some of these devotees who do such tremendous work there. That is almost single-handedly, he made sure that this became a center. It's a private center. One day these will all be accepted, one day. And all of these little centers are not just temples and things. They have schools for the poor children, and he set up a whole dispensary and medical facility there and everything. So it was a very wonderful place to visit. So the inspiration from the holy places and from the brother monks was something wonderful. But now I want to switch to inspiration that I got from our private centers and these sadhus that run them and the devotees of the order, because this was something very, very special for me. We have many, many centers that fall under this big umbrella, Bhav Prachar, they call it, that they're meant to spread the teachings and the work of the order, but they're not formally affiliated centers. And some of these are run by monks who are also not formally affiliated, but 100% Ramakrishna Mission monks. You won't find their name there, otherwise there's no difference. Some of them actually are far more simple in their ways and dedicated workers. I was almost embarrassed, ashamed a few times, to see what a simple lifestyle many of them lead. Anyhow, we went to many of these places. I didn't realize that Swami Sarvadevanandaji, in addition to being so sweet and loving, had such a tremendous passion for these poor village children. And so when we came back from the Bangladesh trip, we went right to the Shikra Kulingram. This is a very special center because it's the birthplace of Swami Brahmananda. Now, this is just near the Sundarbans of West Bengal. And some he may have started, but all of them he supported, these private centers. Many of them were tribal children. Many of them were going to school for the first time that anyone in the family has ever gone to school, certainly the girls, because the education of the women in these villages is almost unheard of. And he supported all of these when he was there and continues to. Really, they run because of money that he gives. If it weren't for the work that he does, I don't know how these places would survive. So we went one after another. We traveled all over through the Sundarban, and then we went to one beautiful center. I don't remember the name. This one Swami named Swami Tyagananda, not our Boston Tyagananda, another Tyagananda. He took sannyas outside. Some of these monks, they're overage, or we have some education standards or health things or something, or some of them, they want to work independently. As if there are some great advantages to working independent of the order, I can tell you that. You don't have to worry about getting that stamp of approval from headquarters and everything. You know that you can stay there as long as you want. You have that stability. So there's a young monk, and they had purchased this old country boat. So we went down the river into the Sundarban. He had this boat because he went from village to village. He looked after all of these places. And they had a beautiful school. We got there, and a couple of hundred kids. Everywhere we went, it was the same thing. They line the side of the road. They throw flower petals at you the whole way. They chant. They give garlands. They make such a fuss. And then we would speak to all of them. There would be some songs, some program, and then they'd give us a big feast and everything. But I was especially impressed with this young monk, so simple and such a hard worker, early morning to late at night, going from place to place, so dedicated to educating the poor because they're so poor. We see some of the big cities, how they've become so modern and everything. These big high-rises and big hotels and everything. But village India is the same. And there's a tremendous need to help all of these. So this was a very wonderful experience for me to see the dedication of the so-called outside sadhus. I don't like the term, but those, you won't find their name on the list, but fully all, in all of these centers, you'll see Thakur Maha Swamiji, same thing. That same devotion. Now, while we were on this trip, as I said, there were a couple of monks who traveled with us, but some householder devotees were also with us. And it turned out that one or two of them had also started private centers in their own villages, and we went to all of these places. But one was Swami Sarvadevananji's younger brother. Yeah, his name is Dilip. And very unassuming, very humble, very sweet-natured, never got upset, never got angry, always wanted to sit in the back. Wonderful person. And if he hadn't, if Sarvadevananji hadn't said anything, I wouldn't have known anything about him, even that he's his brother. He didn't say anything. But I found out that he never married. He had his job, and he took care of, helped, you know, with the family and everything. Every spare moment, he would go to all these village centers. Whatever funds would come from Sarvadevananji, he would take there, purchasing things for them, helping them in every possible way. Whole life dedicated to that. And as I say, the others also, they did similar things in their village. They would start it. Private centers, so there's no sadhu, or else there's someone who's there temporary, but they run them. And again, all of them, Thakur Maha Swamiji. You'll see their temples everywhere. And so it was really tremendously inspiring for me to see the dedication of these householder devotees. Every bit as great as any of our sadhus. So that was a very wonderful thing. I want to mention one special trip that we took, and two devotees, many of you know them, Bharati and Ranjana. They run an organization called Nanaritam. They were inspired by Swami Lokeshwaranandaji. Swami Lokeshwaranandaji, most people know him for two reasons, Narendrapur and Institute of Culture. So we associate him with very high culture. Institute of Culture is for babus. It is for very highly educated people, wealthy people, Narendrapur, some of the finest families will send their kids. But what people don't know is he had this tremendous passion for these, for village work. And he inspired these two, Ranjana and Bharati. Bharati is a doctor herself. Ranjana is a school teacher, huh? Maybe. Anyhow, inspired them to do some work in these poor villages. So they went to a place just outside of Purulia, a small village there, and they started a beautiful charitable eye hospital. And it'll be one of the finest in all of India, that they do all types of surgery and everything. I ordered new glasses the other day, 7 to 10 days. They do it in 20 minutes. Yeah. So hundreds will come from these villages. They'll go out with their own van and pick them up and bring them there. They'll do an eye exam, and they'll give them the glasses the same day, then they'll go back. And they do so many cataracts and state-of-the-art equipment. In addition to this, they run schools for these poor children. They run training programs for the villagers. They teach the women sewing and other crafts and skills and things so they can also earn some money. So we stayed there for 2 days, and so inspiring. The young girls who serve as nurses and the ones who are teachers there. And the doctors, the finest doctors from Calcutta will go there. And not only do they not charge money, they support it. They give money. So this level of dedication that we see throughout the order, the monks of the order, the sadhus who serve in the private centers, the devotees who work there, really something fantastic, something amazing and inspiring. So this is the whole point of all of this. When we go for pilgrimage, it won't simply be these holy places. It'll be the people that we see and the tremendous work that they do. The very final thing that I will mention is the work of our Swami Pranavanandaji. I met Swamiji first in 2005. I was again with Swami Sarvadevananji, and we went to Rameshwaram. Now, Rameshwaram, we associate, of course, with the temple. And really, of all the temples I've ever been to, that's the most wonderful, because so many associations with the Holy Mother, with Swamiji, Thakur's father went there, so many wonderful associations. And it's to see the inscription on both sides of the main gate of Swamiji's reply to the address when he went there. That was the first place he went to in India when he came back from the West. So we associated with that, but it's also full of very, very poor fishermen villagers. And the Swamiji, I'll invite him to just say a few words about that and how they suffer from their poverty, from the cyclones that come from time to time, the refugee crisis with the war with Sri Lanka, so many different things. And Swamiji is very, very beloved there. We saw that. We stayed in his ashram, and how the children and everyone loves him so much, and he does such wonderful work with them. So I'm going to stop here. If anyone is interested in helping out with these two things, especially these two, this Nanritam, I left some flyers outside. You'll see all of the work that they do. And of course, Swamiji's work in Rameshwaram, it won't exist without help from the West. This is the only way that these centers can function. If anyone is interested, you simply make a check to the center and put Rameshwaram or Nanritam there. And then we can just give Swamiji one check that way. So Maharaj, please come, just say a few words about the work that you do.
Sarva jiva pamanasa karanam maheshwaram svikrudanche garvavasha degamasha midrusham ya vidausva lilayache yena divya jivanam ya vidausva lilayache yena divya jivanam tam namami deva deva Ramakrishna Ishwaram Om Sthavagaya Chadharmasya Sarvadharma Swarubini Avadara Varishtaya Ramakrishna Yade Namaha. This is a most auspicious day. I never thought I shall be here during this Bengali New Year's Day. I never thought, and never thought also, I just came here to hear the discourse of Swamiji. But suddenly, the final stage, you have to say something. So, you know, I am from Rameshwaram. Rameshwaram, there are 12 Jyotirlingas in Bharat, 12 very installed by great Maharishis, seers and all, great people, like Patanjali Maharishi, Shankaracharya and all. 12 Jyotirlingas throughout Bharat. Very important is in the north, Kashi. In the south, Rameshwaram. All the other 11 Jyotirlingas were made by Rishis and Munis. Only one made by Sita Mata. By a lady, Sita Mata, mother, goddesses made that one. This is not ordinary thing. You have to keep it in mind. And there are so many great stories and all those things, legends are there. That is also recently proved by the NASA. The bridge, and you might have seen that one. I visited NASA also. along with our Atmarubanji Maharaj. We were together in the Belurma Training Center. He also joined in 1969 in Chicago. I also joined in Ramakrishna Mission in Ooty 1969. We were together in Belurma 1975-76, who is now Houston. So that is the way. Like that, so it's a great this thing. We have to think about that one. That Rameshwaram, that creates. There is a great connection. There are so many sages and saints. Even Guru Nanak was there about more than 2 months he was there. Now they have built a Gurudwara. But for our Guru Maharaj, Mother and Swamiji is very important. Tagore's father, such a great devotee of Lord Vishnu, Shiva and all, he heard about the greatness of Rameshwaram. He wanted to go there. During those period. Those period, no convenience, no travel, no this thing, nothing was there. Even on the road, there is no direction to go. So much of struggle. Rarely one could go. But we, present stage, we are thinking, oh, we have to go, how we can go, and all those things. Those days, Sudhiram Chattopadhyay, Sagar father, walked from there. Take a pledge, very orthodox Brahmin, will not accept anything prepared by them. So he himself used to cook his food, getting some rice, vegetables and all. Offer it to the Lord. Then procedure. Months and months he reached where? Rameshwaram. Rameshwaram. Spend more than 10 to 15 days. There are 3 corridors are there in Rameshwaram. Those who visited, you might be knowing, that Swamiji Maharaj and all came. The Sivalinga, which was made by Sita Mataji, is in the inner corridor there. And outside, there are second corridor. There are 108 Sivalingas are there. Anybody, such devotees or sages coming there, they can independently do puja there. That was the arrangement. That is the arrangement now also. Now they have cancelled that one. So Guru Maharaj's father was there. He himself offered food and all, worshipped that Shivalinga. Then he returned back to, with great difficulty, returned back to Kamarpakur. A son was born. First son is Ram Kumar. Second is Rameshwar. Third is Ramakrishna. So what a great this thing. And shortly, before going to USA, Swamiji took the Parivirga life, wandering life. More than about 7 years was wandering. Swamiji entered into Rameshwaram. That way is unknown sadhu. There are some sadhus, many sadhus used to visit there. And there the Brahmins are highly learned people. Swamiji used to, more than they, some living Brahmins told, their great grandfather told, we used to watch, see a Swamiji full of finds, with the brilliance, and with tejas, used to walk in front of the temple. He will be sitting in the mandapam. We are sagging, who is this monk? Not talking much with them. They used to offer food to him. Swamiji, when starting time, he took 2 sangalpa. He will not touch money. He will not ask food with anybody. So they were very nice. Sometimes they used to avoid him. They used to give the impression. Then they had a talk. And seeing the brilliance of Swamiji, about explanation of the Shastras, Vedas, Mantras, they got stunned. So such a great learned man. In some points where he couldn't explain in Sanskrit, he explained in English. It was something like a shock to all the Brahmins. They told, Swamiji, you are such a great soul. Why don't you go and meet Raja of Ramanad, the King of Ramanad? He's a highly learned man from Oxford University. Why don't you go and meet him? Swamiji walked from there, about 60 kilometers walked, he reached there, and the court was going on. When Swamiji entered, all got up, including the king, without it, something like a shock for them, as if Shiva entered. So that we had some, Prabhu Swamiji, where from you come? Swamiji explained, they made him to sit, and after that, Bhaskara Sedubi, Rajana of Ramnada, had a discussion. He was a highly learned man, very good in Sanskrit. He was started arguing with Swamiji after offering some food to Swamiji. He got stunned to see the knowledge of Swamiji's religious experiences. And the realizations, all Swamiji was, everything through his experience he was talking. That was the wandering life made Swami Vivekananda such great. Everything he understood of Bharat, what is life, everything understood. Then the Raja suddenly brought on this, on the, fell at the feet of Swamiji, what is this story? Swamiji, I have an invitation to go to Chicago to attend the Parliament of Religions. The British people have selected me to go there. I was supposed to go there. After hearing your and understanding your knowledge, I am like an ordinary candle. You are like a burning sun. Your knowledge, your experience, your realization. I feel you are the fittest person to go to Chicago. The original invitation was for the Ramanath, Raja of Ramanath, King of Ramanath. So Swamiji told, everything I do according to divine will. Whether you do with what will, I don't know. Here I submit under your lotus feet. You take it on. So Swamiji put it in the bag. From there he walked to Kanyakumari. He went to Kanyakumari. All the way, more than 500 kilometers, he walked from there. There he saw, he worshipped Mother Kanyakumari Mata. And Adav saw that sea in the, that day was a terrible stormy time. And you could see a rock there. And he felt I should get some this thing, some kind of realization, some kind of what I have to do. So he thought I shall go there. And nobody could help him. Swami swam from there, about 3 kilometers he swam in the rough sea. And he stayed upon the rock in deep meditation. 3 days and 3 nights. Without taking even. There he got the realization. What he has to do further. And the way he was praying. Then Guru Maharaj appeared him in the water. Sea water. You have to go abroad. Permission was granted. From there he went to Chennai. Walked to Chennai. From there he got the message also. Blessings from Holy Mother Sharadama. Returning back also. After his successful. This thing. Here in the land of. Swamiji returned back to, he himself selected to go to Rameshwaram. Wanted to pay his homage to the Lord Shiva. And he went there and gave the Maharaj told his beautiful explanation. It is in love that religion exists. It is inscripted there. It is in love that religion exists. Not in rituals and ceremonies. If you see Lord Shiva in one poor person and helped him, it is equivalent to entering your temple for 100 times, that message he gave, that one. From there, Swamiji, another very important thing, Holy Mother, when heard about, because this is with Swamiji, Holy Mother when heard about, she was so much feeling that once she should visit Rameshwaram, arrangements were so finely made. In 19, Swamiji, in the meanwhile, Swamiji passed away. Mother from that with Golapma, Yoginma and all some lady devotees started from there. Ramakrishnananda Maharaj had arranged for the traveling to Rameshwaram. That was train facilities were there. When that Raja of Ramanath heard about Sharada Mata is coming, told my guru is Swami Vivekananda. Swami Vivekananda's mother, Sharada Mataji, Guru Mataji, she is arriving here. He made elaborate arrangements. And there is a tradition in the 12 Jyotirlinga centers. Adi Shankara made this to make an interlink, interconnection. Kerala Brahmins are worshipping in Kedarnath. In Mahakaleshwar and all from Bihar. And in Rameshwaram, he made an arrangement. Even now it is prevailing that only Maharashtra Brahmins can worship, enter into the sanctum. Those days. And he gave from Kailash, he gave this was Padigalingam is also, which was 1,200 years back, given by Adi Shankara. Every morning they make milk offering for that one. That's it. He made only Maharashtra Brahmins can enter into that sanctum to worship. Even Tamil Nadu Brahmins are not permitted, even now. When Mother came, the Raja was there, he got some kind of inspiration, some power is coming. She is not an ordinary lady. Thought Guru Mataji. She immediately called all the Brahmins to come out. First time in the history of Rameshwaram. All the Brahmins to come out. He told Mataji, you can go inside. You can and worship that. They prepared 108 golden vilva leaves. Even now that is there, preserved in the temple. So, mother entered. They started chanting Maheshwaraya Namaha, Parameshwaraya Namaha, Kailasavasine. Mother offered. That time he felt some kind of a, this thing, ecstasy. Entered into an ecstasy, told, I feel the same presence which was left by me there from thousands of years back. Golab Maki, Maki. Now, just something came in my mind. So everything is proved. That Sita Mata made that one, and Rama's, everything is proved. Why I am emphasizing, you all should keep in mind, if possible. Maharaj told, Maharaj gave so many examples. I was thinking, talking about, but when he told about Belur Matte, I felt something I should tell, experience the great Mahatmas. So I was initiated by Vireshwaranji Maharaj, Holy Mother's disciple, in 1969. During that, I was in 1975-76, I was in Belur Mat. Amma also told Gambiranji Maharaj's disciple. Maharaj kindled that feeling. I want to just few about my experience there. We were in the, along with our Atma Rubanandaji Maharaj, Prahalad Maharaj Houston, we were there. So 97, Maharaj told 97, the send-off function will be there. That time we were 1975, send-off. So we were thinking, we are all together, two batches are there, about 50 brahmacharis were there. We were thinking whom to invite. So there was one Radhakrishna Maharaj, Atma Ramananda, is very brilliant, very excellent. So we just wanted to, their Atmastanji was also this thing, Assistant Secretary, Gitanji Maharaj, Prabhanji Maharaj, then told them, so the excellent Swamiji, so something like a living example is Gambiranji Maharaj. Vireshwaranji is almost our guru. Many times we had a talk with him in the classes and all. So he was avoiding any we were there. Somebody go, no, I shall not come. We have to catch Gambiranji Maharaj, like that. We, some of the brahmacharis went there and requested Gambiranji Maharaj. So it's all the time silent, reading, writing, only administration, very, very powerful administrator. We could see those times the period of Naxalists and all. But the daredevil Maharaj handled, there was a big problem in our institutions. Only Swamiji was like this. So Swamiji, just his presence, they will run away. Gambira Macho, who just will stand there, they will go away. Such, so we have to bring him. So we all went there. And Maharaj, this send-off function is valedictory function is there. Why don't you come and say something to her? You know that I am not going for address or lecturing. You see, I have enough work here. Maharaj, whatever Mimi, this is the bishop of all the brahmacharis. So, hey, you want to put me in, submit me to something? Okay, he told. Okay. So, you know, I talk very little. That you must understand. Accordingly, you arrange. We arranged other, some trustees, Swamis were there. Maharaj in time exactly came and he was sitting there. There's a Maharaj, you can start now. That is. So, he told, start mean what to start, he told. So, Maharaj, you have to bless us, give some advice. So this mean, bless us, give some advice. So I can do that one. I know so many things for I see. What is your requirement? I shall come to the, he told, I shall come to that point. It is not what my experience, all those things. What is your requirement, he asked. So all was a little stunned to how to ask such a great soul. Then Radhakrishna Maharaj was there. He told Maharaj, this is, whatever you say, we shall accept it. Not personally, we are not dare enough to ask you anything. Whatever you say. Then he told, even now it rings in all of our hearts. This Maharaj told, here you are staying for the, now you are completed 2 years, you are going to different centers, places and all. Like that one, I will not say everything is good here, Belur Mat. Both sides of the coins are there. anywhere if you have seen any kind of mistake or something against your this thing, feelings, forget that all. And whatever good is here, for see, this is a Bengali New Year's Day. So this came from my heart because of Maharaj. So whatever good is there, you take it in your heart. Speak about them to others. Spread it wherever you go in any center also. This is simply me. This I actually not blessing. It's my, as a general secretary, it is my appeal. All God's tender. It is my small appeal to you. Like that only. That even now it rings in our hearts. Samji with so emphasis told. And all those rings. So you, the world will institution, you will be benefited. Institution will be benefited. The whole world will be benefited. Then we got some Radha Krishna Maharaj. Okay, shall we go? Maharaj. A doubt for us. What is the doubt? We are all the Swamis, Vireshwaranji Maharaj, Bharat Maharaj, all are coming sometimes staying in the Mandir. But we have never seen you entering into the Guru Maharaj Mandir. Arusha used to stand in front, just you will be walking. Because we understand that you are a perfect Advaitin. So it's written Bhashya and Brahmasutra Bhashya, Upanishad and all those things. Everywhere he quotes Shankara. Shankara's ideas, very nice. So we put that now. In Swamiji laughed. So it is not that I can go and sit because I have this back pain and the leg pain. I am feeling like going, but nobody is dare enough to ask me. Going means sitting is not possible. Climbing the steps also not possible. That is the main thing. It is not that I am attached to Guru Maharaj Madanasan. Then Advaita, yes, I am Advaitin equal. I am Advaitin. Even now it rings on our hearts. I am also an Advaitin. But Shankaracharya, no, I have got my own Advaita, he told. Maharaj, what is that? Sri Guru Maharaj, Bhagavan Ramakrishna, Holy Mother Sharada Devi, Swami Vivekananda alone is real. The world is illusory. Anywhere, he told. This is I, he told. Guru Sri Guru Maharaj, Holy Mother Sharada Ma, and Swami Vivekananda alone is real. The world is illusory. Even now, we all, that one word, sentence, ringing in our hearts. Such a girl, that many such instance, I don't want to extend them. Finally, as a, something like a message, one small story, after that I shall finish, for Bengali New Year's. In Arab country, which inspired me so much, Arab country, they used to go for the Mecca, Medina, pilgrims, we go for Kashi, Rameshwaram. Christians go for the Jerusalem and other places. Arab countries, they used to go for Mecca. There was some remote village. They had to go through that village. There was a poor family staying there. Father expired. Elder son was taking care of the family. Mother used to go and clean some utensils. That's only 2-3 girls were sisters. They were also going for. So any pilgrims going on that way, his name is Abu Ben Adam. Any pilgrims going on, they will go them. I can carry your luggage like that one. There are many used to that. He's very sincere because entire family is depending on that poor family. So he used to carry that one, walking there. You know, days, months, and years went on. He couldn't get married, but got marriage for all his sisters and he may arrange it. One day he was very tired, and other people the pilgrims used to ask him. So you are a Muslim. Did you go to the mosque or make prayer? No prayer. Because I have to take heavy responsibility of the family. My mother is also not well. Have you read Quran? No chance. I myself is completely illiterate. I've never entered into school or anything. This is my kind of, by very sincere man. Whatever the pilgrims offer, that much only he will used to take. Once he was so tired and all was worrying, so what is going to be my life? Then they sheltered in a place. They put some tents. And no sleep, he was disturbed in the mind. But in the desert, he could something like a divine light. He saw, what is this? Let me go then. Then he went there. He could see there an angel is sitting. and writing something. With full speed, she was writing something. He thought, so like such an angel from the heaven, so beautiful, so brilliant. So, see, ma, mother, I am so Yaravito. Ma, mother, she turned back. That angel turned. Oh, who are you at this hard hour? So I am here helping the pilgrims and I want to know what are you writing there. She told, I go all around the world. So devotees of God, those who are devoted to the God, even they are attached to Christianity, Hindu, Muslim, Kasi, all that list I am taking because they are now going on a pilgrimage to Mecca. There I go to Kasi, Benares, Jerusalem, and everywhere I am taking throughout the world. Then he taught himself. So some people told, I have not read Quran. I have not entered into this mosque. So, but I am helping very sincerely, I think. Maybe God may be some sympathy for me. Ma, kindly see my name is there in that list. What is your name? Abu Ben Adam. One stroke, she was completely verified. Your name is not there. He thought I did a great this thing, mistake. Not at least I could have sometime entered into the mosque, something, read Quran. So my life is completely waste. Like this, serving this thing, families and helping the people, like this, like a servant, it has gone. So with so much of disturbance, my reached his hand. Mother was asking, take no, yourself. After few days, another group came. Mother told, go and help them. You will get some money. So he followed them. And he was going there, same with worried man. And another place, they stationed. Then that night also, he could see some different kind of divine light. And he felt, oh, there's something, let me go and see. Maybe the same angel might have come. We shall go and ask him something. Then he went there. That different angel sitting there and writing, speedily writing. Oh, like that, ma, earlier I met an angel like this one. She was collecting the those who are devoted to the bhaktas, devoted to God, their names. What are you writing? So many are devoted to God, to Jesus, Moses, Guru Maharaj and all. But he told those whom the God loves. You may be a devotee of Guru Maharaj, but you should know whether Guru Maharaj loves you. That depends on our inner mind, inner heart. Because I am also doing service Maharaj. But Guru Maharaj loves you. That is important. That is the message. Then this fellow, so I am this kind, last time I saw one Devata, my name is not there. See whether Lord loves me. Kindly ma, kindly see for me. What is your name? Abu Ben Adam. Okay. He took the list. First name is his name. First name is so, we may be to Mother Kali or Durga and all those things. We are doing bhajan, kirtan, everything we should keep in the heart. That should be liked by Thakur Maan, Swamiji or Durga Ma Kali. So this is thing. So I am extremely happy to be here. And Swamiji was also, I have never visited with Washington. Other centers, in 2008 I was in there. By chance, I came at a nice shrine here, Mandir. For Thakur, in the entire USA, I think this is the only Mandir. And so nice, excellent. So I wanted to stay 3 days, extended 2 days with the permission. So I had to write something and also. And your love is extraordinary. Keep it up, but always keep it in mind. He should love you. Yes, Jai Ma. Namaskar.